Well, we'll do a quick review with Frank Joseph Hoff when we come right back, and then we'll get right into your phone calls this hour with him on Coast to Coast AM. This hour calls with Frank Hoff. Frank, let's review real quickly, though, the work that Dr. Santos did, Professor Santos. What Texas, what areas did he go to get those little pieces of the puzzle you were talking about to reverse this?
Well, I went to the ancient Hindu texts and things like the Ramayana, and there's another one I can't quite pronounce the name very well, but it's like the Mahabharata, something like that, and many other ones, which brings to mind, I want to let you know that a couple of people that appeared on your show alluded to this location of Professor Santos, and one of those people was James McCanney. You know what James McCanney?
Oh, yeah, Professor James, sure.
Yeah, he alluded to a professor, a Brazilian physicist out of Brazil.
And this is the one.
It's no other than Professor Santos.
Okay.
And also one other person, too, by the way, who I've also had dinner with, I've conducted conferences with in the past. And I don't know if he even knew that I was working on this project, but that person is Glenn Kimball.
Okay.
And he alluded to it also on your show of that location.
Yes, he did.
As well.
Yes, he did.
So.
Well, and it must be there. It's fascinating research. Let's take some calls. You ready?
Yeah. Before we do that, George, a couple of things. How long are we going to go for on the show tonight?
You've got another hour to go. This hour. So you've got an hour of calls.
Okay. And then that's what we end at basically 1 o'clock Pacific daylight.
Pacific time for you.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to mention one thing here before why Atlantis is important. Okay, to everyone. Before we take the calls, and this is it, okay? Atlantis, first of all, is the spirit of the world or the soul of the world. That is what Atlantis is, really, when it comes down to, at least Indonesia area. Atlantis is the source of most religions and most all our sciences and the races and civilizations throughout the world. Its discovery now, at the very dawn of the millennium, has been predicted from deepest antiquity as indeed the true message of the Gospels and other such holy books. The discovery of Atlantis brings back the hope of rebirth of the Golden Age with its promise of universal peace, harmony, love, and happiness for all mankind. It will also cause a major revolution in our views of the world and of both our past and our future. All this is to happen now as we enter the third millennium, the age of Atlantis, Aquarius. It is a cradle of civilization where civilization began and is a remembrance of our ancient ancestors from our ancient motherland and actually fatherland, which was also the Atlantis, was actually from Mu, was considered the mother and then also the sun, mm-hmm. or actually considered the fatherland, and also in honoring them.
Okay. Well said. First-time caller in Ontario, Canada. Hello, Adam. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if there's people that are direct descendants of Atlanteans and people, if there's that have the bloodline of the Atlanteans.
Do we have direct descendants out there, Frank?
Yes. And what, like as I mentioned before, what they did is, and again, this goes over 11,600 years, okay? So when you're talking about descendants, we're talking about a bloodline that goes out
way back,
thousands of years. And those bloodlines are goes, you know, with, they made it with the Mayans, the Aztecs, and the word Aztec, I mean, it sounds like, you know, the word Aztlan, A-T-Z-L-A-N. And so this is, you know, these are the kind of words, you know, that there's different words for Atlantis. Tolan, you know, from the Mayan, okay, means Atlantis. But, yeah, and also, you know, people in Samaria, I mean, whether it be a male coming out of Atlantis or a female, but they made it with the different indigenous populations, and they were the civilizing heroes to the world. And they brought great gifts, and they were well honored as far as that goes. It's just... And this is part of the reason I'm doing this, too, is to remember our very ancient ancestors from remotest antiquity. It's our primordial homeland.
You know, it also tells you, Frank, that this planet has gone through tremendous upheaval and still will. We're not out of it. Anything could happen.
And this whole thing actually began kind of as a hobby for the professor. And also, of course, as I mentioned to you before, he was actually going to debunk it. He was on the side of the skeptics, and he was going to set the record straight, you know, at least. But he kind of got changed a little bit because he had to spin around 180 degrees. But we really have to admire Professor Santos. Is he was an honest scientist. And even though he was, like, partially wrong on this, you know, he came to grips with, you know, he was at least objective and open. And he wished more scientists would be this way. He actually liked to see this become a scientific discipline. And this is mentioned in the book.
All right. Next up, we go to Houston, Texas. Hello, Troy. East of the Rockies, you're on with Frank Joseph Hoff.
Good evening. It's nice to be with you, gentlemen. It's the best show on radio. I have read the book by Colin Wilson and Rand Flemath called The Atlantis Blueprint. A very fascinating book, as well as your topic this evening. One of the things that you've mentioned is the deluge and what possibly could have caused it. And there has been some analysis done in this Atlantis Blueprint book that puts forth the theory of an Earth crust displacement theory. And they do an analysis of all of these sacred ancient sites around the world and determine that the Atlantis Blueprint is where they have chosen to build specific sites to where they all end up relating back to the meridian of where it was before the deluge. They talk about how the North Star has had three different positions throughout the time based on the different Earth changes that have happened here. I was wondering if your stated location of Atlantis in the China Sea, I believe, if that relates at all any to the sacred sites theory mentioned in the Rand Flemath book, if you're even familiar with it.
Yeah, okay. Now, here's the answer to that question, and this is kind of a multiple-fold answer as well. There's three different types of Earth crustal displacements. In other words, there's one Earth crustal displacement and or pole shift, by the way, which is, let's put it this way. There's three different types of pole shifts. That's what I want to say. Three different types of pole shifts. One is a magnetic pole shift, which definitely happens. One is a celestial pole shift, which does happen. And the third one is Earth crustal displacement or a terrestrial pole shift, which does not happen, okay, is a physical impossibility, a physical and geological impossibility, actually. And it's because the crust is actually anchored to the mantle, and the most we get on that is actually creep, and that's just a matter of a few, you know, centimeters, or maybe at the most a meter, not thousands of meters or anything like that. So there's really, this is, came up from Charles Hapgood about this whole idea of pole shift, who was, by the way, no scientist at all. In addition to that, as far as Antarctica goes, there's been core samples taken of that area, so it can't change into a tropical area or something like that. Earth core samples have been taken that it shows it's well over a million years old that ice has been there. Now, that's important because how are you going to support a population of 20 million people when it's totally frozen with ice for like a million years or more? I mean, this is in the, you know, height of the Pleistocene Ice Age. The only place, and this is why he was able to reverse engineer it back to this area, was something like on the equator, that's on the lower latitudes. And that's also the reason they had to go, even as the Pleistocene Ice Age was melting, into the lower latitudes, you know, South America and so on, and not so much the upper latitudes because they were a polar desert in many cases. Which brings to mind a very important point. Atlantis, which is actually has different names called Trapani is one of them, and also one called Lanka, but not Sri Lanka, not. Don't get confused with Sri Lanka, okay? But this is the whole island that before it got split up of Sumatra and Java. It used to become just called Java at one time, but now it's like an upper Java and lower Java. But what's really interesting is that the latitude at 0 degrees goes right through that area, 0 degrees, okay? What's even more interesting is that the meridian, okay, instead of being in Greenwich, England, and by the way, which is at Greenwich Mean Time, and I, besides other things, am also a ham or amateur radio operator, just like Art Bell is.
Yeah.
And by the way, the motto, I don't know if you ever heard this before, for amateur radio is world friendship through amateur radio. Okay. But the important point is we use a lot of Greenwich Mean Time or Universal Coordinated Time or UTC, okay, because it got changed from actually where it used to be originally, way back, was actually at 0 degrees meridian, which is longitude, and crossed with the latitude. So it was actually, Atlantis was at 0-0 until they changed it over to England.
Okay.
And that points out another part, you know, where another piece of evidence of why it's actually there. Now, this is even more interesting because on the Japanese flag, they have a white background and the sun, okay? And actually, it's known as the land of the rising sun. You've heard that before?
Sure.
Well, actually, it's really not. The actual land of the rising sun is actually Indonesian Atlantis. And that's where the time began, the sun rose and the sun set. It's at 0-0 degrees latitude and longitude, or meridian.
Do you know if they possessed a massive-sized crystal that they either used as a laser or a weapon or what?
Well, now that you brought that up, I'm not sure of all that because I'm still working on some of the research. But what I'm going to show during that conference when you go down there is I've got a couple of pieces of quartz crystal, and a lot of these are using electronics and everything now.
Yeah,
okay?
Of course.
And I'm going to rub these crystals together, and actually they will kind of spark and glow, and they're rose quartz crystals. I don't know if you've ever seen that before.
All right, next up, Tucson we go. Frank, it's your turn. You're on with Frank.
Yeah, hey, guys.
Hey.
Yeah, my question for Frank is not meant to dispute anything he's saying. About 20 years ago, I saw a documentary about a lost ancient map featuring a continent that nobody could find. And that continent was called Atlantis. And then someone reviewing some maps of the continent underneath Antarctica that was taken pictures of by satellites noticed that it was the exact same continent. And I was wondering if Frank knew anything about that.
Let me while you're still on the line, say that one more time about the satellites and what was the deal on that?
Okay, the satellite imageries with the technology that they had, was able to photograph the actual landmass that was under the continent of Antarctica. Did I say Antarctica? I meant to say Antarctica. Anyway, someone who was aware of this ancient map noticed that the continent or the landmass that's under the South Polar ice cap was exactly to specifications of this ancient map that's about a couple thousand years old.
I'm not so sure about that, but I can tell you this. We have, and I will show this at the conference.
This could have been the Piri Reis map.
Yeah.
From 1513.
Yeah. You know, I don't know about that as related to Antarctica, okay? But what I know is on this is that we have a NOAA, a Space Spy Satellite photo. It's infrared, okay? Showing that the actual landmass is down below, you know, between the Indian Ocean and the South China Sea and the Java Sea and so on, okay, in the Pacific Ocean. And it's actually down there. And you can actually see what's above the sea and what's below the sea. And it's a huge continent down there. It's like maybe two-thirds of the landmass is underneath the water of 130 and 150 meters below. And so I don't know about, you know, the other one. You know, one thing, too, is that the size of Antarctica, by the way, is not the fit of the actual geographical size. And I think you were also asking this question before, too, George, that let's see if I've got this written up here. You know, I may have it in a different spot, but I actually pulled the figures. For instance, the size given by Plato, okay, for the of Atlantis is essentially 10,100,000 square kilometers, okay? That equates to about 3 million. Almost 900,000 square miles, to put it into perspective. Now, the continent of of Sundaland, which is what this is really called, Indonesia, Atlantis, Sundaland, is very close, and it's at 10,800,000 square kilometers, okay? Again, 800,000 compared to what Plato said was 10 million.
That's pretty close.
100,000. Now, if I remember this correct, I have to pull it up, but it was closer in Antarctica, something like about 13 million square kilometers. It was quite a bit more, maybe closer to 14 million.
Of all the research that the professor did, was there an area, Frank, that just fascinated you the most as you began to look at all this too?
Oh, boy.
I think for me it was this war you talked about.
Yeah, you know, I thought, you know, that was one of the points about dropping that nuclear bomb down there, and that amount of megatonnage, and he would know about this, was something like 10 times the amount of arsenal we have on the face of the planet today. So they had a lot of power, I would say. And, you know, as far as in other areas like Samaria, they might have had some type of technical nuclear weapons, because the signatures were also in the glass and the sand and all that kind of thing as well.
Next up, we go to the international line. Steve in Ontario. Go ahead, Steve. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Frank. I wanted to ask you about a theory where, assuming that all of this is correct and that there was this highly advanced civilization in the ancient past, what do you think about the idea that not all of the advanced technology was lost and that some of it was preserved, and in fact all the way to this day, and that's why we have royal families, and that could also explain a lot of the UFO sightings?
Well, what I can say in regards to that is that a lot of our sciences and, you know, and astronomy and whatnot actually came out of Atlantis. They were very, you know, they basically invented a lot of these kind of things, or, you know, or responsible. We we've probably maybe gone and elaborated from them, but they were definitely into, you know, metallurgy and weaving and the sciences, and the alchemy, and definitely the agriculture, as far as, you know, really inventing that. And so that's how they can actually, you know, begin civilization. And by the way, a lot of this migration and everything went back and forth between, Asia and Africa and Indonesia and Atlantis, depending on, the weather conditions, or else, the Pleistocene Ice Age and everything. The other thing with Atlantis, Indonesia, is that they had volcanically rich soil. And so they were able to grow crops as many as three a year because of the location in a volcanically rich soil. And those main staple crop actually was probably the rice from the rice paddies. They called the field of reeds. And those field of reeds were most likely the rice paddies. And this is how they're able to sustain a population, because of having basically the Garden of Eden to be able to grow all the different, also golden apples, and which they made the elixir of Atlantis, which I think is something close to being like a medicinal purposes, like a fountain of youth kind of a thing.
All right. Well, stay with us. We'll be back in a moment with final phone calls with you, Frank, before I get into open lines next hour right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're following the fascinating theory of the work of the late professor, Brazilian Professor Santos, with our guest tonight, Frank Hoff. We've got final phone calls with Frank when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. If you're not a member of Streamlink yet, well, for just about a quarter a day, 25 cents, you can become a member of Streamlink and get downloads and podcasting. And also on the first Tuesday of every month, second Tuesday of every month, we chat, and we're doing that on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Pacific time for Streamlink members for one full hour. Just questions about Coast to Coast and some other things, so come on aboard. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Webmaster Lex just did some mathematics and some figuring, and he said now if you sign up for 1 year for Streamlink, the price is down to 15 cents a day. That's not bad. Let's go back to our guest, Frank Joseph Hoff, and your questions for the rest. Frank, tell us again about your conference that's coming up this weekend and the times you'll be speaking up there at the Bay Area UFO Expo.
Yeah, I've got several things to mention here quickly to you, George, and your listeners. The conference is this Saturday and Sunday coming up. That is the 12th and 13th here of September. It's at the Bay Area UFO Expo. Now, I won't be really talking about UFOs. Other people will be doing that. I'll be talking about ancient archaeology and lost civilizations.
With a lot of pictures.
Yeah, a lot of pictures on the PowerPoint presentation. The conference website is at www.thebayareaufoexpo.com. And also there's a link from our website, which is at our Atlantis website, which is www.atlan.org, the first five letters of Atlantis. And there's a link from that over to the conference website. I will be speaking at 8 a.m. on a lecture to start off with for 45 minutes, and then at 9 a.m., that is on the 12th, both days on the 12th, I will be speaking for an hour and a half with a PowerPoint presentation and also a presentation through audio linking directly over to Atlantis, Indonesia area. Actually, it's going to be going to Borneo. With both Hans and Roz Barakoven, which, by the way, would you be interested in having them on as well as myself again as guests and talk about the expedition?
Yeah, I want to get some more data on that, but sure.
Yeah, and their project is called the Sunda Shelf Archaeology Project, okay? And they've been working with the government of Indonesia on this and also the government of India.
Why has it been so quiet, Frank?
In Australia. Well, part of it is that we want to keep the level down so we can get something done. The other thing, we weren't quite ready to release everything because we want everybody, because they're always requesting it, the hard evidence.
Yep.
Well, I'll be
yep.
showing some of those photos at the conference, so that'll give you more incentive, I guess, people that come to the workshop, because we'll lay out so much in the lecture and we'll lay out the rest in the workshop. And so that'll be good. Now, there's one other thing I was going to mention, too, and you're very interested in Egypt, right, Art?
Absolutely.
George? This is what's very interesting I came across, and one of the things you're asking me about. In ancient Egyptian, it was known as Punt, okay? And when I was in Egypt, actually, it's the woman, Pharaoh, Hatshepsut, and she, when one of the temples or the places, I can't remember the name, it starts with a Denda Diar or something like that. I can't remember the name. I'm sorry about that. But anyhow, on one of the walls in there, she talked about the trip to Punt, okay? And Punt was the ancestral land called Tor, the island of fire, where the Egyptians originally came,
mm-hmm.
okay? Now, in the dawn of time, and they were expelled by the cataclysm from their primordial land, which is Indonesia, Punt, okay? The Egyptians moved to their promised land in the Near East, which is Egypt, okay? And which is really Het-Ka-Ptah, which means the second abode of Ptah, which means the second, like, home of Ptah. So the question is where is the first homeland, all right, if that's the second?
I bet it was Atlantis.
Yeah, it's not Egypt, okay, because Egypt is the second one. And Ptah was the supreme creator of the culture.
Now, you do know if you tell Zahi Hawass that, he'll chase you around the room.
Well, he had his chance when I was at Canada Place a while back, but he was not too big on it. But he didn't know exactly what I was doing either. So we'll have to
cross that bridge when you get to.
Yeah, when I get there. So he didn't quite understand what was exactly going on. But everybody was there, and that's when I met with Art and Ramona. And actually at the conference, who I didn't meet with, but my friend did, was Danian Brinkley.
Danian's a super guy. Let's take some final calls here. Let's go to Wayne in Halifax, Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Wayne.
George and Frank, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
About 35 years ago, you woke up my senses about this Atlantis. Well, this one teacher, he said 80% of the smart ones, genius, they had red hair. And they're the ones that they picked to do the research and stuff.
And
I don't know how true that is.
And I couldn't hear what you were saying about who they were.
The Landis genius, the one that did all the inventions, and they said they all had red hair.
Red hair. All right, Frank, what do you think about that?
Well, I think there's a very good possibility that's true.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that almost is like another show, too. And that's...
Well, I'm not going to do a whole show on red hair, but that's all right.
Yeah, well, it has to do with the different races coming out of Indonesia and meeting with some other populations around the world. But, this is a dispersion from that area. And so, even like the Chinese, may have had like red hair. And there's also a whole other thing about the white Ethiopians, because actually it was another name for Atlantis we called Ethiopia, and not the Ethiopia we're talking about in Africa.
Interesting. All right, Joyce, you're up on the West of the Rockies line. Hey, Joyce.
Hi. I'm extremely interested in why people want to prophesy the end of the world. 2012. What is that in connection with? I mean, how did they come up with that?
Well, I tell you what, I'll give you just a capsule of that, but that would be a great open line question next hour if you want to call back. 2012 has all kinds of possibilities, and nobody really knows what it will be. Everybody's theory is exactly that, just a theory. Whether it's going to be a solar event, as I think, theory. Whether it's going to be a moment of enlightenment, theory. Whether it's going to be an asteroid that strikes us, theory. All of it is theory. Nobody really knows exactly. You know, there are some scholars who have studied the Mayan culture. They've studied 2012, and they have their own ideas of what they think will happen. None of us really will know until we get very close to that time period. It may be a year before that, maybe a few months before that, it may be very close to that day, or nothing at all will happen, and we'll just go on our merry way. Next up, we go to first-time caller line in Fort Worth, Texas. Dowell, hi there.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I had a question as far as you had a guest on talking about Wormwood, the brown star, brown dwarf star, the star that was approaching. And that it could literally cause a magnetic change in the Earth's field and literally pull a land up out of the water if it was indeed, you know,
right.
Atlantis was submerged. And how that ties in with what I've read in Revelations, where it talks about there once was eight, now there's seven, one was, is no more, but will be again. And when I read that, and I've always felt that sounds like they're talking about different lands. We have seven continents. They once talk about Atlantis being another continent, once was eight, is no more, but will be again.
Uh-huh.
That all seems to so closely, so much gel with, you know, your other guest talking about Wormwood, this guest talking about Atlantis, and other guests that you have. And I just want to get your guest take on,
okay,
on that.
Frank, did Professor Santos talk at all about Atlantis rising, literally?
Yeah. Also, when I go back to the previous caller, in a sense, too, if I find any information that I brought back from Brazil, from Professor Santos, on with regards to the Mayans, the Mayan calendar,
mm-hmm.
And I get a lock on it, I'll let you know.
All right.
Okay, that's number one. Number two, on his, addressing to the this caller's question, there the Atlanteans, the islands or isles of Atlantis were also known as the Isles of Bless, and these were actually the seven Isles of Bless of Atlantis, okay? And also, I think there's some concentric rings and things that are maybe associated with that as well. But it's actually the seven Isles of Bless, and that's known by some different, groups maybe, or I should say, peoples around the world that they call it the Isles of Bliss.
All right, we go to George in Phoenix, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hey, George.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, loud and clear.
Yeah, your name's Mark?
No, his name's Frank.
Frank, I'm sorry. Yeah, the History Channel had a documentary on some structures that they found in the South China Sea, somewhere off way off the coast of Japan. And you never said that they found the structures. You said they were buried by silk or something. They had documentaries on Bemini Road and all that. They were trying to say that the structures were just accidentally cube-like pillars under the ocean like the Bemini Road. But then they did a panoramic span of the whole structure, and they seen that it was like a building or a temple. And they just said, well, it's an ancient city, probably one of the oldest ones they found, but they've actually found that structure. And I just wanted to say to George that if you could go to, like, Zero Records and find that song by Billy Thorpe called Children of the Sun, it'll make great bumper music.
Okay,
for
we'll
you.
Turn our guys
Children
loose on
Children
that
of
one.
The Sun by right. Billy Thorpe.
He's writing it down now. Let's address for a moment, Frank, Bimini, Edgar Casey's area. You mentioned that something was there, may not be directly associated with Atlantis. What's your take on that?
I don't think it's associated really at all. There's that it has to do with some of these, you know, maybe like tidal wave action or something of like, you know, that causing the, you know, some of that area to be formed the way it is. And so there's information I could probably start, you know, delivering to you or, you know, exactly the reasons there. But it's really it's too small an area. It's in the Atlantic Ocean as it is today. The other thing is that Plato also mentioned that there's many islands on the way to the area, which in this case there's really not. It also mentioned that the outer continent would have been further, the Americas would have been further away from it. There's just a whole lot of reasons why it's really not there. But mainly, it's, there's not many islands on its way from, like, Europe or the west coast of Europe to this location. Columbus, when he was looking for Atlantis, he was looking for it for the kings and queens of Europe. That's what he was looking for. And there's a lot of different names for Atlantis, you know, that are, or the oceans, I should say, as well. But it's really just not the area for a whole lot of reasons.
But something is there.
I don't know if it's even there. And then also we talk about off the coast of Cuba. That might end up being like... even I've heard some, like, maybe missile silos that
yes.
have been down there, too.
Yes.
So there's nothing coming of this. This is with Paula Zielinski and her group that was out of Canada. But, you know, it was kind of a big splash, and nothing ever came of it there. Oh, by the way, when I mentioned the NOAA space spy satellite regarding our Indonesia location, there's also another one. Two from another source, which is National Geographic, showing it's in that location as well, and I'll show that at the conference too. So we got this from like about five different sources. Another one's the Dr. Voris, Harold K. Voris from the Field Museum in Chicago, and he did an extensive topography of that area, also showing the same thing. And each one of these from all these different sources. Actually fit kind of like a glove, all showing the same thing underneath the ocean of, you know, the sun to shelf and so on.
How would you compare the size of Atlantis to the other continents, like if you would, Africa or Australia? Probably bigger than Australia, I assume.
Well, I had these up on my computer just a minute ago. I was explaining some. Let's see, I'll go back here again. Compared to the USA, United States, from what Plato said, he said 10,100,000 square kilometers, and with Europe, in comparison's sake, would be 10,600,000. So that one's kind of close. For the United States, it's 9,826 square kilometers. So, you know, kind of close to the United States, but still not exactly the same.
And it must have fit because, you know, I believe all of this was one entire landmass on this planet. And then, of course, it spread apart.
Yes.
And I would assume Atlantis was right up there underneath, next to Africa, in underneath India, China, and that entire region.
Well, it's definitely there's continental drift. That does occur, okay? And it takes millions of years. It doesn't happen, like, right away, kind of thing, like a volcano.
No, maybe billions of years.
You know, and so this idea of pole shift, that's terrestrial pole shift, doesn't happen, what we now know about plate tectonics, but just we just have really creep with that. And so it takes a lot of time. So this idea of this pole shift action is the professor was adamantly against that, or this Earth crustal displacement, which cannot happen, is a physical and geological impossibility. And you can check with any credible scientist in that manner.
Let's get a quick question from Glenn in Texas, if we can. Glenn, real fast.
George, Frank, how you doing?
Good.
Fine.
Frank, did this professor, Santos, publish any works of fiction? Because it sounds like he's just compiling facts from his knowledge base, as Carl Sagan did for Contact, in the same way, but different genre.
All right. Did he?
Well,
Frank,
I mean,
you know?
he published a book in Portuguese, and also now the one in English, you know, on regards to, Atlantis. He also published many other types of papers as well, and I've got a lot of that information as well. I've got to sift through a lot. This takes a lot of work to do.
But they weren't fictional books.
No, you know, he's not into really the fiction type thing. You know, he's into he's a scientist from academia. He's more interested in science history.
Well, I got to tell you, Frank, it's fascinating work indeed. Frank's website, atlan.org, ATLAN.org, and as he mentioned, he will be at the Bay Area UFO Expo this weekend. Good luck with your speech, Frank, and thank you for all the information. When I come back, sound off open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM.